From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Well, good afternoon, and welcome to this Thursday edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, as Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council and President of FRC Action. A great honor, as always, to be sitting in for Tony. All right, coming up on today's program.
I see many of you in the room where I'm speaking to you on phones, I'm speaking to radio, I'm speaking to television. Television's coming over here. Excuse me, what are we doing right now? She's not doing any news conference. You know why she's not doing it? Because she can't do a news conference. She doesn't know how to do a news conference.
Of course, that was former President Trump earlier today during an unscripted, might add a no-holds-barred press conference that he was having with reporters. It lasted for more than an hour. Meanwhile, and yes, we are counting, it's been 18 days since Kamala Harris became the Democratic nominee for president, and she has yet to offer herself for an extended interaction with the press. So what can we draw from all of this? I'll be joined here in just a couple of minutes with Congressman Glenn Grothman to discuss this. And with Harris avoiding questions from the press, the American public is being kept in the dark. Kept in the dark about someone who is seeking the highest office in the land. But the people and the press, for that matter, deserve answers. And we'll provide some later on when I'm joined with FRC's Meg Kilgannon, who will be shedding some light on what Harris's real vision for America looks like. And while legacy media continues its honeymoon with Kamala Harris, in spite of the fact that they're getting very little out of her, they're also covering her running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, who frankly continues to find himself in tremendous criticism over his record, including the latest controversy over claims he made about his military service.
I'll take my kick in the butt for the NRA. I spent 25 years in the Army, and I hunt. And I gave the money back, and I'll tell you what I have been doing. I've been voting for common sense legislation that protects the Second Amendment, but we can do background checks. We can do CDC research. We can make sure we don't have reciprocal carry among states, and we can make sure that those weapons of war that I carried in war is the only place where those weapons are at.
All right. Well, that was Walz back in 2018. But the thing is, Walz never carried weapons in war. The truth is, he was never in war. We'll be unpacking all of this later in the program with Congressman Keith Self, who, by the way, did serve our country for 25 years and who was, in fact, deployed to Grenada, to Bosnia, to Afghanistan, and to Iraq. He'll join us to talk about the governor's record a little bit later. And for our election integrity segment today, I'll be joined by FRC Action's Ken Blackwell. He is the former Secretary of State for the great state of Ohio. And we'll be taking a look at what Ohio has been doing in the election integrity front, as well as Virginia, where an executive order was signed by the governor there yesterday to clean up the voter rolls. So we've got a lot, as always, a lot coming your way, a lot to unpack today in the program. If you happen to miss any portion of today's program, you can catch up by going to the website tonyperkins.com, where you can not only find this edition of Washington Watch, but also past editions as well. And you can also, of course, find tons of resources there. So bookmark that webpage, tonyperkins.com. And don't forget, I've been mentioning several times this week, but the team at iVoter Guide is hard at work to finalize the iVoter Guide for national, state, and many local elections. And I know many of you not only want this personally, but you want to be able to share it with your friends and neighbors and so forth so they can know what to expect, so they can be educated as we're coming into this. To get more information about the iVoter Guide and to get it when it is available, you can text the word GUIDE, G-U-I-D-E, text the word GUIDE to 67742, and we'll keep you posted as to when it is available. All right, let's jump into today's program. Earlier this afternoon, former President Trump held a press conference, and he fielded questions from reporters That's something that we've already been talking about. It's something that Vice President Kamala Harris has not done since she replaced President Biden as the Democratic nominee for U.S. president. So what can we draw from all of this? What can we draw from the fact that we see Trump out there answering questions, but we're not seeing Kamala Harris? Well, joining me now to discuss this and more is Congressman Glenn Grothman. He serves on three different House committees, one of which is the Oversight Committee, which, by the way, he and I sat side by side on the Oversight Committee for a long, long time. He represents the 6th Congressional District of Wisconsin. Congressman Grothman, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to see you, my friend.
I'm so fortunate to be interviewed by Jody Heiss.
Hey, listen, that goes the opposite direction. All right, Congressman, let's start with this. Former President Trump, he covered a lot of ground today with reporters at his press conference. Isn't that the way it's supposed to be with any candidate who's seeking the highest office in the land, that they go before the media and inform the people of who they are and what they believe? Shouldn't we be seeing this from Kamala Harris?
You think so. For those of us old enough to remember going back to Richard Nixon, the supposedly liberal press was always asking for more press conferences. We need more press conferences. We need more press conferences. Joe Biden 4 years ago addressed a minimal number of press conferences. It took 3.5 years to find out why that is, and that he had beginning dementia, and they were afraid to put him before the press. Okay, so now we're in the same situation here with Kamala, and one more time, the press, which is usually leading the charge, we need press conferences, we're going to judge the president by how many press conferences they have, is relatively mute on the fact that Kamala Harris doesn't want to meet with the press. Now, there are a variety of theories for that. Maybe she's a very poll-driven person without any concrete opinion on issues, and she's yet to decide where she stands on the issues. Maybe her handlers are afraid of what she'll do if she's unleashed. But for whatever reason, she is not going out and taking interviews. And the press that normally would crucify a candidate for saying, I'm not having press conferences, doesn't deal with the issue.
Yeah, well, frankly, they did the same thing with President Biden while he was asleep or whatever he was doing in the basement of his home during so much of the time. And we're seeing a repeat of it. But this is getting a bit ridiculous 18 days now after a historic change of events from President Biden to her as the Democratic nominee. It's head scratching, to say the least. Let me ask you this. The press conference that President Trump had today, were there any takeaways that you took from that? Anything that the American public should take away from that press conference?
Well, just one more time, emphasizing the huge difference on issues between the two of them. You're never going to have, I can think in my time, even last time where you had Trump against Biden, you're never going to have an election in which the difference between the two candidates is more stark. And, you know, you start with a border. Maybe 7 million people coming here during the first 3.5 years of the Biden administration. President Trump, he had about 5,000 people a month. So you're going up by a factor of about 10. You have the huge difference in, I think, what you're going to see as far as level of spending. Three big bills that were, you know, totaling over an additional $3 trillion passing under the Biden administration, obviously leading to inflation. That's a huge problem. You have the energy situation, which is fanning the flames on inflation. President Trump, let's drill some more. Let's produce more oil in this country, which also would reduce the amount of money that we're sending to Iran, to Russia. Kamala, presumably following the footsteps of Joe Biden, we don't want to produce this stuff here. So, you know, any way you look at it, just huge differences between the two parties. And like I said, I would lead with immigration on that. The racial divide, you know, big time Kamala Harris judging people by race, thinking that how you think is determined by where your great grandparents come from. I think President Trump is more upfront with people, just judging people by who you are. So that's another way you've got, I think, a big difference between the candidates.
Well, certainly, I agree with you. Certainly a huge contrast being made between the two parties. But also in the mix of all of this is also a contrast being made between the vice presidential candidates as well. You're from Wisconsin, not too terribly far removed from Minnesota for sure. What's your assessment, Minnesota?
I'll tell you something. I'll tell you something that we thought on the difference between the two candidates here. You know, normally Wisconsin is a much closer state than Minnesota. Minnesota is a more Democrat state. But when you saw the polling data maybe 3 or 4 months ago, it was actually Wisconsin and Minnesota relatively close. We wonder why that is. And the conventional wisdom among the political class is the reason, relatively speaking, President Trump is doing better in Minnesota than Wisconsin is because Governor Walz was so liberal. This is before anybody thought he'd be a vice president, was so left-wing that the things he did in Minnesota have poisoned the Democrat Party for Minnesota voters. So if you would ask me, what do I think about the governor of Minnesota a month ago, I would have said, well, he's hurting the whole Democrat Party in Minnesota because he's so wacky, so out there on the issues, some of which you've covered. I never would have dreamed 2 months ago this guy, who we believe is hurting the Democrat brand in Minnesota, is going to be named the vice president of the United States. But that looks like where we are. Now, I hope the Republicans haven't told everybody how bad Walz is prematurely. And because I think if I were the Democrats, I'd be looking to swap him out for somebody else.
That's an interesting thought. That would be yet another historic event if that were to take place. But, you know, the pressure that's coming on and more that's being revealed about him, I wouldn't put that out of the equation at all. All right, listen, our time is beginning to run out. I wanted to get to something else. Of course, House Republicans have, everyone's in recess right now, but House Republicans have been very active, sounding the alarm on the southern border. The Judiciary Committee released a couple of reports on this. Of course, the committee that you serve on, likewise, Oversight Committee, is doing some tremendous work on the border and demanding some answers. The documents, the communications from the Customs and Border Protection, what are you hoping is going to come from all of this?
Well, I think we have to further educate the American public on the cost of illegal immigration, both the cost as far as the dollar cost, more welfare, more education, but as well the cost in crime, people getting killed, that sort of thing. The human costs, even of the people coming here, the huge number of people drown in the Rio Grande, drown in the Pacific Ocean, die, dehydrate in the Arizona heat. So we want to one more time tell the American public, look, this is what you're voting for if Kamala Harris gets back in there as president of the United States. And there's no question this is the way it's going to be. The American public should have figured this out 4 years ago when Joe Biden raised his hand and said he was going to give free health care to all the immigrants. So it shouldn't have come as a surprise, but I still find when I talk to people around Wisconsin, it surprises them. Why do we have a president of the United States that doesn't care at all about our immigration laws? You're going to get that in spades if Kamala Harris, right? I mean, she is Miss Open Borders.
Thank you, Congressman Glenn Grothman. Great to see you again. Thank you for joining us on Washington Watch. Always an honor.
Thank you very
much.
My
friends, after the break, we're going to look further into this most recent controversy over Tim Walz's National Guard service and the issue of stolen valor. So don't go anywhere. We've got much, much more coming your way on Washington Watch straight ahead.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, SageCon, to learn more. That's SageCon, SageCon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. I'm honored to have you on board with us. All right, yesterday, during a campaign stop in Detroit, Republican vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance fielded questions from reporters for, goodness, almost 40 minutes. And during that time, Vance, who is himself an Iraq War veteran, but he seized the opportunity to target the military record of Kamala Harris's running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. And Vance, during his remarks, reminded voters about Walz's deployments and his suspiciously timed retirement from the National Guard ahead of his unit's deployment to Iraq. And breaking just earlier today, the Harris-Walz campaign tacitly acknowledged Walz's aggrandizement of all of his military service by quietly editing his biography. Interesting how that works. So what can we make of all of this? Well, with me to discuss this is Congressman Keith Self, who himself, by the way, served our country for some 25 years before retiring with the rank of lieutenant colonel. And as I mentioned in the opening of the program, he was deployed to Grenada, to Bosnia, to Afghanistan, and Iraq. So today, we are honored to have him. By the way, he's a member of the Committee on Veterans Affairs as well as Foreign Affairs, and he represents the 3rd Congressional District of Texas. Congressman Self, always an honor to have you on the program. Welcome back.
Good to see you, Jody. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. All right, so what do you make of the governor's apparent years-long mischaracterization of his own military service? I mean, this is not new. He's been doing this for quite some time.
We see a lot of people do that, Jody, and because of that, I'm very careful, and I want to correct one thing you said. I was in the Gulf in Qatar for Iraq. I was not in Qatar, in Iraq. I was in Qatar with the Central Command headquarters, so I'm very careful, and he should have been as well if he's going to be a member of the House of Representatives and the governor of a state. This is something you do not want to get wrong. Your military history, because it's important to Americans that we want to honor our veterans. We want to give them honor where honor is due. But at the same time, we do not want people to elevate, to aggrandize, as you said, their military history. That's a serious matter to the American people.
Well, it is. And I want to just say thank you for correcting my error on that and not having it exactly right either. But now with Walz, we see the campaign, I think, at least in very sloppy fashion, trying to make an effort to correct the record earlier today. How do you take that?
Well, he got busted. I mean, there are a lot of veterans out there that know him. I've called him out for wearing a hat with the Special Forces insignia on it because I earned my Special Forces insignia. He did not. I understand it was a gift from the first Special Forces group, but he was wearing it in other events, which indicates that he wanted people to think that he was a Special Forces Green Beret. He is not. So he continues to just be a fraud when it comes to his qualifications. I mean, not only his deployment, but the rank, the two that people are questioning. There are too many veterans out there, Jody, to let him get away with that as public a figure as he is.
Yeah, I think that is an excellent point. Let's just go to a little bit. You are kind of like the epitome of what someone thinks of as someone who has served our country. I mean, your record speaks for itself. You didn't shy away. You answered the call of duty when called upon. But it's different with Governor Walz. I mean, even while he's advocating for gun control, he mentioned about the gun that he carried in war, but he never was deployed to any kind of war zone. I mean, how serious is that, not only to America, but to veterans? What do you make of that and the fact that the legacy media certainly seems to be trying to cover for him?
Well, the legacy media will cover for him as much as they can. That's why we need to, these veterans that are doing their job in calling this out, calling attention to the fact that he is lying. And it, as I've said before, it is very important to the American people because the military should hold itself to a higher standard because we go in harm's way, 1% today go in harm's way, actually go in harm's way for the other 99% of the citizens. We should hold our veterans, our young men and women who go in harm's way to a high regard. But at the same time, that means that the people who have not done it and say they have should be held to great shame.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In your opinion, is this a case of stolen valor?
Well, stolen valor, I've actually gone back and looked at the actual law. It applies to individual medals and about four or five actual combat ribbons of different designations. So in this, it is the idea of stolen valor, but I don't think it fits under exactly the law of that is known as stolen valor. But the idea, absolutely. If it looks like a duck, it quacks like a duck, it walks like a duck, it's a duck.
Wow. Well, quack, quack on what's happening here for sure. Well, listen, in addition, there are so many things. It seems like every day there's more news coming out. In addition to his inflated military resume, what are some other issues that concern you regarding Governor Walz?
Oh, my gosh. The only authentic thing about Tim Walz is his communist beliefs. That's the only thing that I can tell is actually authentic about the guy. Because when I have a list here, because I can't remember them, all of them. An April 23 law allowing the state to take your child if your child is confused about his gender or her gender and wants to be castrated or mutilated, the state can take the children away from you. How about stocking tampons in the boys' bathroom, supports abortion up to the moment of birth? Incredible. Sanctuary cities, free health care for illegals, driver's license for illegals, free college for illegals. He wants to give them ladders to scale the wall, shut down the schools during COVID, destroy businesses during COVID. Here's the big one, the Summer of Love in 2020. He actually supported the burning of cities, the destruction of cities. I mean, and the list goes on. There is too much to talk about, Jody.
Well, I tell you, that list needs to get public. And it is. There's a lot of people talking about all these things, but having a concise list like that is extremely helpful. Congressman Keith Self of Texas, always an honor to have you on Washington Watch. Thank you for your service to our country in the past, as well as in the future, in the present. And thank you for joining us today on Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Jody.
All right, friends, after the break, Ken Blackwell will join me as we talk about election integrity Don't go anywhere. We'll be back.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. Glad to have you joining us today. All right, yesterday, Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin signed an executive order instructing the Department of Elections to remove non-citizens who may have purposefully or accidentally registered to vote. The order also required that the state identify and remove deceased voters, catch this, the number of which totals over 78,000. Well, in contrast, there's another state, Ohio, that made only surface-level efforts to address their election integrity problems. So what can we take away from this tale of two different states? Well, here to discuss this is Ken Blackwell. He's FRC Action Special Advisor for Election Integrity. And as you probably are well aware, he previously served as the Secretary of State for Ohio. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to see you, my friend.
Jody, good to be with you.
Okay, look, before we get to your state of Ohio, give me your thoughts on what Virginia's governor has done.
I think the governor has aggressively addressed an issue that must be addressed across the country. As you know, we have a decentralized system, and so states approach these problems differently. But what needs to be addressed is the real threat to the integrity of citizenship in our country, and that's tied to the porous borders that we have. So our national sovereignty and the integrity of citizenship is really wrapped up in how various states, or all of our states, deal with these election integrity issues.
Absolutely, and I think it was a bold step that Governor Youngkin did, that he took for Virginia. So let's switch over to Ohio by contrast. Explain to us what's happening there as it relates to this issue of election integrity.
Well, I think, one, Ohio didn't have as a deeper hole that Virginia had. And the reason for that is that we've had two consecutive secretaries of state that have dealt with, one, non-citizen voting, have also dealt with keeping foreign money out of our elections, changing the composition of the electorate. And we've done it by making sure that we have all of the polls in Ohio covered with trained poll workers and observers. So it's a very transparent system. Now, Jody, I'll just tell you, President Trump won Ohio by by 8 points. I would imagine that he's going to win Ohio by 8 points again. This is not going to be down to a nail-biting contest like it will be in Virginia, because that will be a clawback effort by the Trump team. But, you know, when you start talking about Arizona, Nevada, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, we're talking about results that will probably be within the margin of litigation. Again, Ohio, not to worry. All systems need to be stress tested, and we need early warning systems. And I think that those are in place in Ohio. But this is, I don't think Ohio is going to fall within the battleground states this time around, because it wasn't last time. And again, not to worry, because Ohio's governor, secretary of state, and both chambers of the legislature have been dealing with this issue. And I think that things are under control. But I tell Frank LaRose all the time, we have to be willing to have folks kick the tires. And I think there's a citizen group that's kicked the tires. And now it's our obligation, and Frank's obligation, to show them that their worries are misplaced.
Well, absolutely. Real quickly, our time is running out here. If you could, from a 30,000-foot perspective, just 1, 2, 3, what are the biggest concerns you have as it relates to election integrity nationally? What are the issues that need to be addressed?
Poll coverage, making sure that it's a transparent system. We need to make sure in our 3,100 counties, as many, if not all, of the polls are covered by bipartisan sets of eyes. The other thing is to make sure that we are aggressive in cleaning up the voter rolls. Now, the opportunity in Ohio closed yesterday, and that's the case in most states. But I feel confident that we have been paying attention to voter rolls and aggressively dealing with them, just as typified by what the governor did in Virginia yesterday.
And I would personally add to that the voter ID. I mean, we need to know that that people are
who they say
voters
and Ohio through citizen involvement and aggressively asking for it. Ohio has now photo ID, and I think that's very, very important. I've been advocating
extremely
for that
important.
For quite a time. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now with what Governor Youngkin did yesterday in Virginia, can other states, governors, secretaries of states do more between now and election time to secure election integrity? Has what Governor Youngkin done, is that a good model for others to take?
Well, I think his risk orientation is a good risk orientation. And you just have to be willing to press the envelope, because what's at stake again, Jody, let me just say, the integrity of citizenship in our country and our national sovereignty. And so making sure that we have people in elected positions, whether secretaries of state or governor, that are willing to say, we're going to go to the mat on these issues, is very important.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ken Blackwell, FRC's special advisor for election integrity for FRC Action. Thank you for joining us on Washington Watch.
Let's get to the polls.
All right, get to the polls. That's right. All right, after the break, we're going to have a discussion about presidential candidate Kamala Harris and what she's been avoiding to do. Talk to the press, talk to the people. So we're going to talk to you about it right after the break. Stay tuned.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Good afternoon, and thank you so much for joining us today on Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, sitting in today for Tony. Let me give you just a quick reminder before we get into this final segment. You know, we watch and we're keeping a close pulse on what's happening in Israel and ready to break in to give you the latest if anything were to happen with the situation with Iran. Unfortunately, we didn't have to bring you that kind of break-in scenario right now. But nonetheless, it's critical that we get behind Israel. It's critical that we understand where President Biden stands on Israel, as well as where the presidential candidates stand on support for Israel. We have a petition for you to sign so that we can deliver to them, letting them know that the people of the United States care about Israel and care to know about where they stand. You can sign the petition by going to frcaction.org/support. That's frcaction.org/support. Or you can text the word support to 67742. And then, for those of you who either yourself or you know someone who is wondering why we should be praying for and standing with Israel, well, Tony has a brand new resource out. It's called Why We Must Pray For and Stand With Israel. And we want to get a digital copy of that resource to you. And we will do so with any gift of any size to FRC. We'll send that digital copy to you. And again, you can simply text the word Israel to 67742. All right. Final segment. It's been 18 days. Since Kamala Harris became the Democratic nominee for President of the United States. And while we have seen a lot of her in ads, scripted rallies, we've seen a few brief statements, but nonetheless, she has not offered herself for an extended interaction with the press since June 24th. And yeah, let me underscore that. I said June, not July, since June 24th. And that was when she was on the left-leaning MSNBC's Morning Joe. Well, Republican vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance, he's been demanding that the media pressure Harris to answer some questions about her record. He even went to speak to reporters who were waiting yesterday for Harris on a Wisconsin airport tarmac where his plane and hers arrived at about the same time.
Had they give you guys an explanation for why she won't take questions from the Harris?
Hello?
Nobody? Okay, great. Well,
I hope that she
sense in your mind, because it'd be good for the American people, and I think it'd be good for you all if she actually ran a real campaign instead of one from a basement with a teleprompter.
Well, let me just say this. If Vice President Harris won't provide answers to the press, if she won't provide answers to you on where she stands on all the issues, then we will. And joining me now to talk about what we do know about the vision of the Harris-Waltz administration is Meg Kilgannon, a senior fellow for education studies here at the Family Research Council. She presently served in the Department of Education during the Trump administration. Meg, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to have you.
It's always great to see you, Jody.
Okay, we've got a lot of ground to cover. I've already noted on the program today how former President Trump, he held a press conference. He fielded a lot of questions from reporters today. We've talked about the fact that that's something we have yet to see from Vice President Harris. What message does this send to the American public?
Well, I've been really amazed that Vice President Harris has not addressed the press and the larger public. She's delivered remarks exclusively to audiences that are places that she's comfortable with. And it says to me that she's not interested in asking for my vote. I'm a voter and maybe I haven't made up my mind yet, but she's not offering herself in venues where I might notice her because she's not speaking to me. She's not speaking through the press to me.
That's a great point, because that is what it's all about. That's what the questions are about. That's what the media interviews are about. It is about reaching out to the voters. It's about letting the people know where she and her running mates stand on the various issues. And when they hide, it raises all sorts of questions. But we do know certain things. So let's start off with your area of specialization, and that would be education. Okay, about a couple of weeks ago. In fact, you were on with me a couple of weeks ago. Just a couple of days after President Biden had dropped out of the presidential race, Vice President Harris delivered a keynote speech at the American Federation of Teachers Convention, and she repeated something that she has said all too often, that Republicans want to ban books. Let me play this clip for you.
Book bans in this year of our Lord 2024.
Tell them, President Harris.
And on these last two issues, just think about it. So we want to ban assault weapons, and they want to ban books.
Wow. Okay, please, Meg, unpack this for us.
Well, I think that she should check the Supreme Court docket, because a decision just came down on a New Jersey case where New Jersey had an assault weapons ban, and I believe that that was knocked down. So good luck with that one.
But she did admit that they want to ban guns. I mean,
that's true. She's going to keep trying.
That's a big Second Amendment issue.
Let's not let the Supreme Court be the final say. Their Biden administration is famous for getting knocked down by the Supreme Court and just doing exactly what they want to anyway. So, but no, she set up this false choice. I mean, the whole issue around book banning is so interesting to me because, of course, we don't want to ban books. We simply don't want pornographic material to be presented to school children as educational. And we certainly don't want it on offer in school libraries. This is not anything any reasonable person doesn't understand. And so the way that she wants to gloss over all of this is to just talk about the religious right wanting to ban books. Well, that's not exactly honest. Neither is it honest that they want to ban assault weapons, because they want to ban all of the guns. She's for mandatory gun, but give backs and buybacks and all of that kind of thing. So this is a non sequitur.
Well, and it's interesting. We on the program yesterday, we talked about Oklahoma now using the Bible in books, and they, surprise, surprise, want to ban the Bible.
Right.
So
they have banned the Bible, in fact. They've banned prayer in school. Right? They've removed a lot of things.
Right. All right, going back to her address to the ATF convention, she also talked about the fight for freedom. Play for me, if you will, clip 6.
Ours is a fight for the future. And ours is a fight for freedom.
In this moment across our nation, we witness a full-on attack on hard-won, hard-fought freedoms.
Okay, translate that for us, please.
I think the most attacked freedom that is under under attack now in the America is religious liberty. And of course, she does not mention that in her list of freedoms that she feels like are under attack, right? She thinks that for some reason you're not going to be able to love who you want to love, or that you won't be able to say gay, or any number of these ridiculous tropes that the Democrats trot out in election years to activate certain segments of their base. And it's been quite something to watch her speeches. Her stump speech and the speech that she gave at the ATF was her first riff on the stump speech that she then repeated at the announcement of Tim Walz as her vice presidential pick. She has some themes. The main theme is freedom, freedom on Democratic terms, right? Democratic Party terms, freedom not of people to practice their faith and to live out their faith, but rather freedom to, you know, abort your babies, a freedom to present sexualized material to children, freedom to to give children transitional services, to castrate them, to sterilize them in these ridiculous so-called gender affirming care experiments on children. Those are the kinds of things that her administration has advocated for. And that's the kind of freedom that she imagines for the country. But that's not how she talks about it in her stump speech.
Yeah, it sounds good to talk about freedom. But life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, all of those things are freedoms that she restricts in what she and the Democratic Party really are trying to advance. She also, while she was announcing Governor Walz as her vice presidential pick, she mentioned that she wanted to lift up the middle class. Right. What does that mean?
Right. Well, they. I think that the Republican Party's rebrand, so to speak, aligned when they offered the president of the union a key spot to speak at the convention and are open to more to messaging more on how difficult it is to make a living in this country and how hard people work so hard and they still can't make it because of the economy. This is something that that rings true for voters, and they have to be seeing this in their focus groups and their polls. So the for Vice President Harris to mention these things is her way of not taking responsibility for the bad economy as the vice president, but to make a promise about improving things when she is eventually, in her hope, elected president. So she gets to have her cake and eat it, too. She doesn't have to take any responsibility for her role in destroying the economy, but she can have us all dream fancy, wonderful dreams about freedom and uplifting the middle class as if there's going to be some sort of magical thing that happens when she's president and things will change. And we have to think it's magical because she has no policy at all on the website of the campaign. She's not taking questions from the press, as we said. She's making no specific policy recommendations about what she's going to do as president. She's painting with very broad strokes.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that kind of struck me, because I was in the middle of all of this, but I don't mean to be splitting hairs here, but it strikes me. All right, she tells people that the highest form of patriotism is to fight for your country. Now, you can take that a couple of ways, perhaps fight for your country in the military, but I don't think that's what she meant. She was referring to these people who are in the audience here. It sounds like something an insurrectionist would say, at least according to Democrats. That's what they've said in the past. What do you make of that? Am I taking that too far? I mean, it's okay for them to make these kind of statements, but not for anyone else to say it.
Well, it's okay for them to hold race-segregated events to launch her campaign. You know, white dudes for Kamala and black women for Kamala. I mean, can you imagine if a Republican tried to have an event like that, how it would be cast by the media? And so the media is very much complicit in this entire process of reimagining Kamala Harris and presenting her to the country. And so that's why it's important to consume alternative media, to listen to other voices who can have can add some context and some facts to this word picture that they're painting for folks in the country, because it's okay, apparently, for Kamala Harris to encourage her audience to fight for our country. But it is not okay for former President Trump or any Republican to say the same. I mean, that's a clear double standard, but we're kind of used to that.
Absolutely. And here's another thing that's coming out that I know is right down your wheelhouse. But yesterday, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, she was pressed on the administration's rewrite of Title IX. And she was asked whether the president has any concern over the harm that it will cause to female sports and directly to women and girls. And she basically said that the rewrite is about protection. Let me hit this clip real quickly. Clip 7, please.
Every student deserves the right to feel safe. Every student deserves the right to feel safe in schools. That's what the rule is all about, strengthening and restoring vital protections that the previous administration took away.
Wow. So everyone deserves to feel safe. I guess that includes girls, women who have men in the locker rooms?
I certainly hope it does. I mean, that's what I would like to think it means, but that's certainly not what the rule says that they have promulgated. And that's why it's enjoined in many, many states across the country. It's because of the fact that it does not protect women and girls. It does not protect every student. It prioritizes some students over other students. And this is certainly not the original intent of Title IX. Nor is it supported by any kind of common sense. And anybody who's spent 15 minutes in a school building lately would think that this is a good idea to let this rule go through. So this is the theme that she hits in her stump speech over and over again. This idea that somehow the right is going to roll back protections for people or are seeking to, inhibit people's ability to live their lives. And it really is confession by projection, because they are the ones who are putting people in jail for praying in front of abortion clinics. They are the ones who have sponsored the lawfare that has harassed President Trump for all of these many, many months and years, and other people around him with ridiculous and pointless lawsuits. I mean, they are the ones who are weaponizing government. It's not us.
Yeah, and restricting the rights of the American people. Meg Kilgannon, thank you so much for joining us today on Washington Watch. Always appreciate your insight and what you bring to the program. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, friends, that wraps up yet another edition of Washington Watch. We've got so much to cover, and we try to bring it all your way, honestly, with transparency and integrity, and from a biblical worldview perspective. Hope you have a fantastic remainder of your day, and we look forward to being with you again tomorrow right here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.